Am I audible to everyone? Yes, confirm. Am I audible to everyone? Maybe some of you can move inside. Are any more devotees going to come? You can move a little to the side so that devotees won't get crowded there. So, today, for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Shishya Parampara, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and for the purification of our own heart, we'll discuss about the glories of one of Srila Prabhupada's most intimate disciples and one of the most dynamic leaders of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, his own is Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who recently returned back to the spiritual world on the day of Ram Vijayotsav Dasara, which is also a very holy day as per our Gaudiya Vaishnava as well as Vedic calendar. So we'll start with the prayer, which is offered to the Vaishnavas, especially those who are assisting and participating in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can repeat this prayer. Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Sarve mahanta khila krishna tulyaha.
Sarve mahanta khila krishna tulyaha.
Samsar lokan paritarayanti.
Samsar lokan paritarayanti.
Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha. They are the personified manifestations of the rasa of Sankirtan, of the divine pleasure of Sankirtan that is manifested in their lives. Prema pradanai. Not only are they experiencing it, but they distribute the prema to everyone. And khalu shuddha chittai. There's no doubt that their hearts are pure. They just come here to receive love of God. They have no other aspirations. Sarve mahantaha. They are all great souls. What we are described in the Mahatmas. They are all mahantas. Akila krishna tulyaha. They are as good as Lord Krishna himself. Because if Lord Krishna can give us Krishna prem, they can give us Krishna prem. And what do they do? Samsara lokan paritarayanti. They deliver all those souls who are wandering in this samsara, in this material existence. So once again we'll repeat. Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulyaha.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulyaha.
Samsar lokan paritarayanti.
Samsar lokan paritarayanti.
Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulyaha.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulyaha.
Samsara lokan paritarayanti.
Samsara lokan paritarayanti.
Would anyone like to recite? Anybody has noted down?
Sankirtananda rasa swarupa.
Prema pradane khalu shuddha chittai.
Prema pradane khalu shuddha chittai.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulya.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulya.
Samsara lokan paritarayanti.
Samsara lokan paritarayanti. Sankirtananda rasa swarupaha.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Prema pradanai khalu shuddha chittai.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulya.
Sarve mahanta akhila krishna tulya.
Samsara lokan paritarayanti.
Samsara lokan paritarayanti.
personality, there are different ways of doing it. So we will today discuss from a historical point of view what were the contributions of Bhakti Siddhanta Damodar Maharaj. So when we want to understand history, we need to understand what was the past, what is the present, and what is going to be the future. And then we can understand what was that person's contribution in the making of the present from the past and the future from the present. So in this way, we can understand how, as Srila Prabhupada said, the Krishna consciousness movement will go down in history as having saved the world in its most dangerous hour. In its most dangerous hour, Kali Yuga, and that too, the gross materialistic age, the Krishna consciousness movement will go down in history as having saved the world. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Damodar Maharaj especially assisted Srila Prabhupada in the scientific preaching of Krishna consciousness, as most of you are aware. So, he was born in Manipur, in a small village named Taulun, on December 9, 1927. And the very name Manipur, Mani means jewels. So, the place of jewels. And the jewel that was present there was not just the jewels of material opulence, but the jewels of Krishna Bhakti. In fact, both the Mahabharata as well as the Ramayana describes how the kings of Manipur were of a very illustrious Vaishnava background. And as we know, when Arjuna went during the 1 year of exile, which he had to go, when he entered Yudhishthira's chambers where he was with Draupadi, at that time, he married Chitrangada, and then he got Chitralekha, I think. And then one of the sons that he got was Babruvahan, and Babruvahan was from Manipur. And later on, when there was a confrontation between Arjuna and Babruvahan, Babruvahan did not know that Arjuna was his father. He knew that Arjuna was his father, but he did not know that the warrior who was fighting him was Arjuna. So he fought him and defeated him. That Arjuna, whom nobody could defeat, that was the caliber of Babruvahan. So in fact, when Srila Prabhupada met Bhakti Siddhanta Damodar Maharaj for the first time in New York, at that time Prabhupada reminded him of this. This is the glorious tradition of Manipur. So so his father, Bhakti Siddhanta Damodar, he was born as Damodar Singh. His father's name was Thaudam Yogendra Singh, and he was also a Vaishnava. And from his early childhood, he grew up in an atmosphere where his parents would be chanting the holy names and telling the pastimes of the Lord, and the whole culture there was very surcharged with devotion. The Prabhupada writes that many of the temples in Vrindavan and especially near Radhakund have been built or sponsored by Manipuri kings. So he was born in a very devotional culture. However, now 1937 was just the time when the World War II was about to start, and Manipur is very close to Burma. And when India got involved forcibly on the side of the Allies, so Japan attacked from this side. So Japan actually conquered Burma, and they came on the verge of India. So many of us know Prabhupada in Calcutta when he was bombed. So they had to flee from their home, and they became like refugees at that time. So at that time, Damodar, as his parents had named him, was just 9 years old. And they fled, they survived the attack. But subsequent to the attack, because the whole plan in war is that destroy all resources, destroy all water, destroy all grains, because if those go in the hands of the enemy, then the enemy will be nourished. But in the process, when they destroy the grains, local people starve. So there was epidemic of cholera at that time, and his father passed away in that epidemic. So at just the age of 9, he became fatherless. And somehow after that, in the tribulation of the war, by the will of destiny, he was separated from his mother and sister also. He was just left between one older sister. And she was looking after him for about 5 years, and then she got married. And when she got married, he was left alone. And at that time, it seemed almost that he would have to drop out of his education. and he would have to just start working on the fields. He was earlier also working on the field, but along with that he was doing some education. So one of his school teachers, who saw from his childhood that he was a very sincere and intelligent student, he recommended to one of the most eminent and charitable citizens of Kowloon, one Karan Singh, that he's a very intelligent boy. So then he met Damodar, and he was so impressed by Damodar that he adopted him as his own son. And then began a new chapter in the life of Damodar, this young boy. And he, as soon as he got the opportunity, he studied very diligently. And there was one of the most prestigious universities in Imphal, in the whole of Northeast. He got admission in that. After that, he came to Calcutta for his graduation as well as his BSc degree and his MSc degree. And then the Department of Education, on the behalf of the Government of India, gave a scholarship for him to go and get education in America. Such an outstanding student. The Government of India sponsored his education. And then he went abroad. He got admission for his PhD in Physical Organic Chemistry in the University of California, Irvine. And at that time, as he was doing his studies, so in 1969-70, at that time, he got the news, that is, he got a telegram that chemistry department had given him the news that your mother has passed away. So he was shocked, and he had not heard from his mother for 3 years. 3 years had been the time he had been doing his PhD, and he had not known that she was having any sickness. So he wanted to go back for the Shraddha and other ceremonies, but he had no money. So he somehow begged from friends and collected some money. So at that time he received a letter from Ms. Karan saying that you're already doing your education now, we have done the Shraddha, there is no need for you to come. And he felt himself very hard, broken and helpless. His mother passed away, he couldn't help it, and he couldn't even go for Shraddha. So at that time he spent his days and nights wandering on the flickering nature of this world, and he lost interest in his studies. So he had another friend of his, one Mr. Ravindra Pratap Rao. So he said, he saw, seeing that he was so depressed, he decided, let us go out for a walk to the gardens. And when they were going out in the garden, then that same Lord Krishna, who had arranged for him to take birth in Manipur, he arranged, he's Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, Buddhesha Yudhishthiti, Bravayan Sarvabhutani, Yantra Rurani Mayaya. That he is guiding the wanderings of all living beings. So they guided him in the park at the same time and same place where devotees were performing Harinam Sankirtan. And they were very amazed to see this. In fact, if you know the whole culture, especially after the way India got independence and the emphasis of the Indian National Government, Pandit Nehru and others, the whole focus of India was on industrial development. So he is responsible for the first time. He thought, what is this? You know, we Indians should develop ourselves scientifically, but what are these Americans doing chanting Hare Krishna? He was surprised and taken aback. So they followed the Harinam party just out of curiosity, and then Mr. Rao, he became very interested. And he went to the temple the next morning and he asked many questions, and he told Damodar that it's a very beautiful temple, very pleasant and very soothing atmosphere, you'll get a lot of relief. Damodar said, no, my study pressure is very high, I cannot come now. And then again and again he called him, but he never came. And then once he told now Srila Prabhupada, the founder of ISKCON, the great saint, he has come. So Damodar said, no, I cannot come. And then he wanted to meet so this Dr. Rao. He also was a science student. He was also doing his master's degree. And he went and met Prabhupada, and he was very impressed by Prabhupada. And finally, one day, Mr. Rao came to him. And he said, today, if you don't come to the ISKCON temple, I will never talk with you again. So then, seeing this ultimatum, Damodar said, let me go with him. And then as they were going along, he told that today, actually Prabhupada is going to initiate me as his disciple. He was very surprised. He was very amazed to see his seriousness there. He knew that they would follow a lot of rules. And then he attended the initiation ceremony, and then they went upstairs to meet Prabhupada. And then when he introduced him that he is from Manipur, and now he has come here to do his PhD. So Prabhupada mentioned about the glorious Vaishnava legacy of Manipur. And then he said, you know, India is going to distribute the wealth of its spiritual culture to everyone in the world. What have you done coming here to beg for the material knowledge of the West? So you should distribute the spiritual knowledge. He had never heard anything like this from anyone. And his heart was completely shaken and moved by this one glorious encounter with the Prabhupada. And then after that he started coming regularly to the temple. And in a very short time he was initiated. And Srila Prabhupada was so inspired to have these two scientists as members of his con to carry on his movement that he named Dr. Rao as Ramanand Rai and he named the Damodar Singh as Bhakti Swarup Damodar, two intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they will carry on at the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and help in fulfilling his prediction of Prithvi Deva Chaitanya Garaji Gram. So then from 1970 onwards began a time when Srila Prabhupada started personally training these two disciples in the training of Krishna consciousness and scientific means. So there are letters of Prabhupada. He said, now that we have got these two scientist disciples, Ramanand Rai and Swarup Damodar, then now we will arrange for them to go to all the universities all over the world and tell all the scientists that Darwin is a rascal. So now Bhakti Swarup Damodar Singh at that time, now he on one side attracted to Prabhupada because of his spiritual qualities, and he has himself had a dormant spiritual culture in him, but then his heavy condemnation of science, it took him for some time to digest it. So Prabhupada writes in his conversations that you know, whenever I would be on the morning walk, I would see, where is our scientist? And I was thinking that if I can impress him and make him into a devotee, then he can do a lot for our mission. So once he was telling that the scientists are saying that the link is still missing. The link between the apes and the humans is still missing. Prabhupada said the link that is missing is between my boot and their faces.
So Prabhupada was very heavy.
And seeing his saintliness and still saying his tremendous conviction about the scientific topic, gradually Damodar Singh was transformed. And he became a devotee. In fact, he became so inspired that he said to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, I don't want to continue my education. I will join you full time. Prabhupada said, no, you completed, get your PhD degree. And then use that degree in Krishna service. So he also imbibed Prabhupada's fiery spirit. So many of us know that there was this eminent scientist, Stanley Miller, who, you may have read of the Miller's experiment in your school textbooks. So this, he would synthesize some amino acids from basic elements like carbon dioxide, methane and all those. So he won the Nobel Prize for that, because amino acids are one of the most important building blocks of life, and this is considered a major breakthrough in proving chemical evolution, in proving that life comes from chemicals. Of course, Stanley Miller, just a few years ago, he said that, you know, that famed experiment has led nowhere, because amino acids are just like you make a brick. Now, a brick is very far from a house, and even if you succeed in making a house, still there is nobody inside the house, isn't it? So amino acids are a long way. But anyway, at that time he was very famous. So based on Prabhupada's inspiration, when Dr. Stanley Miller had come to the University of California to give a talk, so after the talk, when there were question answers, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Das at that time, he asked, if I give you all the chemical ingredients, can you make life? So Stanley Miller said, that I cannot say. And nobody was really taken aback by such explanation, because they knew, you know, they couldn't make it. But when Prabhupada heard it, Prabhupada was so happy. He said, our Bhakti Swarup Damodar defeated that scientist. Then there was another prominent Indian scientist, Har Gobind Khurana, who won Nobel Prize for his contribution in chemistry. and he made some significant contribution in protein synthesis. And so then Bhakti Sodamagara, he at that time distributed a pamphlet saying that proteins are not life and they have not made any life. Life is completely different. And then that was the time when Khurana was going to come to the University of California to give his presentation. And it led to another confrontation. And Prabhupada was very happy with the way Bhakti Sodamagara Maharaj was working. And then soon after this, so Ramanand Rai, he passed out. University came back to Gorakhpur. That was the place where he was. And he was a very vigorous teacher. He nearly started a center in Gorakhpur. But somehow Lord Chaitanya had some other plans and he passed away from this world in 1976. So then in 1974, Srila Prabhupada started the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And he made Bhaktisiddhanta Damodar Das at that time as the international director of this movement. And he wanted them to go. In 1974 was the year also when Bhakti Sodama Maharaj completed his PhD. So now he was free to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. He joined as a brahmachari once. And of course, he would wear civilian clothes whenever required and preach. But Prabhupada had great hopes and expectations from Bhakti Sodama Maharaj, and he gave many, many instructions to him. So now, to understand the importance of preaching to scientists especially, we need to take a little background. As an example, again going back to the Second World War, when the Second World War was going on one of the first, you know, there were the Allies, they were mainly England, France, Russia also joined in. Russia had not joined in, but when Hitler attacked Russia, Russia also joined in. And of course, later on America entered when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. So, and the Axis powers were Germany, Italy and Japan. So now Germany and Italy were very soon defeated, but Japan was still fighting, and Russia somehow had some friendly relations with Japan. So Russia could not really attack Japan, nor let America attack Japan from there. So Japan was just going on and on and on fighting. And the war, the way Japan was equipped and was fighting, the war could have gone on for 5-10 years more. So what forced Japan to surrender? The atom bombs. Now, whether the atom bombs were right or wrong, that is completely an irrelevant issue. But the point is that, you know, at a one-to-one level where the fight is going on, the fight could have gone on for a very long time. But drop one atom bomb and the whole fight ended. The enemy was forced to surrender. So the way all of us are preaching, it's like hand-to-hand soldiers fighting, you know, converting one person at a time. You know, we are helping them to understand how Krishna consciousness is the ultimate goal of life. But millions of people are being miseducated, and out of them a few hundreds we are re-educating in truth. You know, millions of people are learning that there is no God, there is no soul, life, there is only one life, and that is what the educational system is. So if this educational system can be changed, it is like dropping one bomb. You know, the whole basis on which atheists are fighting against devotees, that basis itself will collapse. And if evolution is proved to be wrong, because evolution is in the minds of the common people the strongest proof, or that is the most plausible explanation of life has come about. So we know even 500 years ago, even in the West, people were mostly theistic. They might not have been devoted to Krishna, but they were devoted to God. But then since Newton started discovering his laws of motion, then a new school of thought came in. So theism means we accept God as the controller and the creator. But a new school of thought came in, which is deism. Deism means you accept God as the creator but not as the controller. God is created the world, but now the world is being controlled by laws of nature, laws of physics specifically. So this deism itself was a great setback to religion. Because if God is not in control of this world, then if we pray to God and serve Him, still He has no power to help us. But after that, so God was relegated to the role of just a creator who has nothing to do now. But then Darwin proposed in 1859 the theory of evolution. And then that was like, God was not needed as a creator also after that. Parallelly, the Big Bang theory came up. And then after that, in the 1890s, there was a German philosopher, Nietzsche, who made the conclusion even more explicit and blatant. He said, God is dead. So this is how God was exiled from the education system. And because of that, the whole miseducation started. And atheism spread very rapidly. So when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he knew that he would have to take up the whole Western civilization on his own. And of course, Prabhupada, even if you read his BTG writings before, when he was in India, he was very strongly condemning sense gratification, materialism, industrialization. And when he went to the West, he continued that. But as he preached more and more and more, he realized how people are just not open-minded. So people see religion as a sentiment, as a disease. So if you see Prabhupada's comments on, say, evolution or Darwinism or science, and the more his movement spreads, the more Prabhupada openly condemns Darwinism. And the more Prabhupada increases the attack on it. And that is why Prabhupada felt that this thing, if you can disprove the theory of evolution, then people's minds will be open. And once they come to religion, then among all religions, the Krishna conscious religion has the topmost philosophy and the topmost practices. So now the people who are following religion, either in the West or in the East, are mostly sentimentalists. The intelligent people are mostly on the party of the materialistic scientists. That's why Prabhupada wanted very much to expose the evil theory of evolution. And when Prabhupada said that, by baffling Darwin's theory of evolution, you will make spiritual advancement, Prabhupada said. That's why by chanting Hare Krishna or doing any other limbs of devotional service, Prabhupada considered it so important for the preaching mission of Krishna consciousness. And in fact, he wrote letters to all the ISKCON leaders saying that Bia is our most important preaching arm. Of course, Prabhupada said book distribution is most important. Prabhupada said many other things are most important, but since Prabhupada specifically mentioned that also. So, in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada was in his final days in Vrindavan, so at that time he told Bhakti Sudama Maharaj that you organize an international conference. And Prabhupada said that you organize it in Vrindavan. So, it was very surprised. Our international conference, we want big scientists to come. Then we should have Bombay or Calcutta or Delhi, those in the honor of Vrindavan. And ultimately, if they come to Krishna, the boat, they will be Krishna purified. So, so then, in his final days, he organized the conference. And although Prabhupada was at that time only on Charanamrut, and Prabhupada was not eating anything, he was only hearing kirtan. But whenever Bhakti Swarupa Damodar Maharaj would come, and he would ask, so, what is the report? And he would very eagerly know. He told him where you should lodge the scientists and how you should talk with them, how you should deal with them. And he took very personal interest even till his last days. And he was very pleased with Bhakti Sadhana Maharaj organizing this conference. And then, later on, when Srila Prabhupada was in his very final days, so he was saying, the only thing I will drink is Charanamrut and the only thing I will hear is kirtan. So at that time, Bhakti Sudama Maharaj came, and then they were talking about preaching to scientists, and then the Madhukshya Maharaj said that, Prabhupada, would you like to have some kirtan now? Prabhupada got angry and he said, what do you think we are doing now? This is Krishna kirtan, smashing theory of evolution. Then, in 1977, Prabhupada left this back to the spiritual world, and Bhakti Sudama Maharaj was, soon after that, he was made one of the gurus of ISKCON, and he took sannyas in 1979. 1981, he was made the GBC member also. And then subsequently, he focused on preaching by developing relationship with scientists. Rather than confronting scientists, there are different ways, and there are many different devotees who are within ISKCON who are preaching to scientists in different ways. So the method that he adopted was building bridges with scientists, and then once they appreciate Krishna consciousness they appreciate a devotee as a person, and then they will become more open-minded to hear the philosophy and the scientific presentation of the philosophy. So his focus was not so much on hardcore scientific research of the Vedic literature, or hardcore scientific research of modern concepts, but it was building bridges and then presenting in a scientifically appealing way the basic concepts of Krishna conscious philosophy. And he organized two main conferences. One was in 1986, which was the first World Congress on the Synthesis of Science and Religion. So the conference which he organized is Vrindavan, that was the first Life Comes From Life conference. And this was Synthesis of Science and Religion, that was on the occasion of Prabhupada's centennial. It was organized, as far as I remember, in Mumbai. And it was very successful. And he organized a second conference in 1997 in Kolkata. That was second World Conference on Synthesis of Science and Religion. And that was also very well received. Several Nobel laureates attended that conference. And they made very appreciative comments about Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's contribution, as well as the DI's role. And then just recently, in 2005, just in the last part of 2004 and early part of 2005, he organized another international conference in Rome. Rome, which is like the capital, religious capital of the Christians, where he organized a conference. Again on life and its origins, from ethical and spiritual perspectives. So, while he was preaching, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he wrote many books. So, the book of the second conference was Thoughts on Synthesis of Science and Religion. And as you know, arranging conferences and traveling all over the world, meeting scientists or hosting them in the Holy Spirit, that requires a lot of funds. And later on, as ISKCON diversified, ISKCON could not provide as much funds as were required for Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And then his whole preaching was in a crisis because of that. But wherever there is a will, there is a way. So one of the, there's a Metanix Corporation, Metanix Foundation, which is funded by some very wealthy Americans who are very interested in pieces of science and spirituality. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj met that director of Metanix, and the director was so impressed by Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's sincerity and his endeavors that he said, "I will sponsor all of your international preaching activities." So that person is a Christian and he's American, and Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is Indian and he's a monk. But that was the way he could relate with people in a very attractive way. And then after that, that's how he got the funds for his conference in Rome 2005, as well as his Garuda vehicle. He has two Garudas, one is a very long one, but both have come to Pune, so which go all over India and they distribute his books. So people come to, how many have you seen the Garuda? Everyone, isn't it? So that is among the longest vehicles in all of Asia, especially which is on the roads. And it's very attractive. People come to see the books, see the bus, and they take the books. So now, while he was doing all this, so he wanted to organize this conference in 2005. So that conference was held at the same venue where the Nobel laureates are felicitated every year. After the Nobel Prize is announced, that hall is the same place where the Nobel laureates are laureate, and that costs millions of dollars to rent even for one day. It's very expensive. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj rented it for 7 days, and again he interacted with the person, the officer over there, and that person was so impressed that he gave the whole hall free for 7 days of the conference. And then when the conference was held, it got such a wonderful response. So many youths, so many people participated because big scientists were coming, and it was presented in a very appealing way. So the mayor of Rome, he came for the conference, and he said that this conference is one of the few ways we are attracting our youths to spirituality and religion. So at the end of the conference, he told Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj that if you can organize this conference every year, I will arrange to give you this hall venue free every year. And in fact, there is in the last year's Vyaspuja book, there is a letter of appreciation sent by the Prime Minister of Italy to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj for organizing this conference in their country in Rome. And that was published along with that is of course in Italian, so we cannot understand it, we know that the translation is given. So that was published. So he was getting a lot of appreciation in that field also. And before that, in around 2000, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj became one of the co-founders of a organization called the United Religions Initiative. This was an organization akin to the United Nations, but the United Nations is mainly secular. Whereas this, they wanted that all the religions should come together and bring in and re-spiritualize the world. So in just 6 years, the United Religions Initiative spread to almost 50 countries, and it's still going on very well. And so as a part of that, he was also involved in many interfaith meetings and peace conferences. So when the WDC disaster took place, at that time he was in New York. And Bhakti Sudha Maharaj, as you know, is a very good singer. So his singing was generally, it's not so common that a scientist is also a good singer.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever the scientists and social leaders and politicians, diplomats would meet, they want to have some sort of auspicious invocation to start the conference. So once they came to know about Bhakti Sudha Maharaj, would be the person whom they would call to invoke prayers, and he would sing some Vedic hymns or some Hare Krishna mantra and like that. So after this WDC disaster, when all the religions came together and they held a prayer for peace after the terrorist attack, so at that time Bhakti Sudha Maharaj was invited to offer the invocating prayers. And that time he sang Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And that was broadcast live on America's national television network. So he was having wonderful preaching influence in a very subtle way. And then once when the Garuda was distributing books in Bangalore outside IISc, so that was a program for which the Indian President Abdul Kalam had come. And he just came out and he saw this big vehicle, he was interested, and he saw the books next to it, and he came. And he saw this book, Thoughts and Senses of Science and Religion, and he was so impressed. The next morning, Maharaj Kolkata office got a phone call. The president wants to talk with you. And then immediately, the president of India called him, and Bhakti Sudha Maharaj went and met him. And after that, the president was very impressed by Bhakti Sudha Maharaj's personality. In fact, in my laptop, I have got photos of the two of them meeting together. And they had very warm interactions. And then at that time, Abdul Kalam wanted to bring out a book, so compilation of various Indian thinkers about how India should progress so that we can usher in an era of peace and of harmony. So towards the era of peace and harmony, that is the compilation. And then he selected Bhakti Sudha Maharaj, the editor of that book. So then, that means all the other writers are just writing their own concocted ideas of what to do for ushering peace. But this will be a book which will go to all the top libraries in the world. And because all these materially respectable people are writing, that book has a lot of respectability. And in that book, there is one article by Bhakti Sudha Maharaj, the editor, and actually very respectable, which gives the pure philosophical message of Krishna consciousness. Bhukta Ram Yagita Kasam Sarva Lokam Ayyam Sudam Sarva Bhuta Ram Gyatva Vam Shanti Vrichyati. So he was, in fact, after that, Bhakti Sudha Maharaj was at the request of Dr. Abdul Kalam, he was also involved in the India-Pakistan peace mediation process. And that's why in the last 2-3 years, he went almost 6 times to Pakistan. Of course, when the National Institute was there in Pune, he was in Pakistan at that time. That's why he could not come here for the question. So he was involved at a very active level in preaching at very influential circles. Now, of course, Bhakti Sudha Maharaj was from Manipur, and Manipur is a Vaishnava state. So Prabhupada gave him several instructions, among which two were major. One was to preach to scientists, and the other was to revive Vaishnavism in Manipur. So Bhakti Sudha Maharaj, he went to Manipur, and it was a sensation when he went back, because he was like a Manipur. From there, for any boy to go abroad at that time was very rare. And for a boy to go abroad and become a monk after that, that was even more rare. So when he came back, it created a sensation. But still, how influentially he was preaching and everything, he created a very great wave of resurgence of spirituality, especially devotion to Krishna in Manipur. Now, the northeastern states are politically not very significant for India. And that's why India gives very little attention to those states. And even if you see the Hindutva organizations also say BHP, BJP, BHP have very little activity over there. And that's why that has become like the world's conversion capital. So Christian missionaries are preaching over there vigorously, and just by giving money, they have two policies, the check and the gun. If you become converted, you get the money. If you don't get converted, we'll shoot you. So it's like that. So at the time of independence, the total Christian population in the Northeast was hardly 1 or 2%. Now, there are some states in which the Christians are more than 50%. And overall, the Christian population in North is almost 30 to 35%. So they are converting like anything. And of course, now we have nothing against if a person, you know, search for God, goes over to some other religion, there's nothing wrong. But here, it's just out of material gains. And the worst thing that happens is that when Hindus become Christians, in order to defend their conversion, they become very offensive and antagonistic towards their own culture. And then they spread offense, they spread misconceptions, and they blaspheme the Hindu deities, and they damage Indian culture very much. So it was such a situation that Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj preached. And several times he had threats to his life also in his preaching. But he preached on fearlessly. And he started seven schools, which along with giving academic education were also giving education spiritual value, not just spiritual but professional value. And almost 4,000 students are being educated in those schools which he started from. And the Maharaja of Manipur, who is not having much administrative power now because it's part of a democracy, but still he has a lot of influence both in terms of social respect as well as financial wealth. So he was he's a Vaishnava still, and he was very inspired by Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj. So he had built a temple in Radhakund, near Radhakund, just recently. And a few years before Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj's departure, he donated that whole temple to Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj. So along with that, Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj started a Manipuri cultural arts group called Sri Ranga Ketana, Sri Ranga Niketana. So this cultural arts group would perform Manipuri arts to various audiences. It was an effort to preserve and spread and share the Manipuri devotional culture to everyone. And they have performed in over 300 centers on over 30 countries all over the world, and they are very rapidly spreading. How many of you have seen those? They have 150 drummers together. A drum performance is the most amazing. They have around 150 drummers together, and they have some devotional song going on. And these drummers, they have huge drums, and while playing on those drums, they just dance, and then they do somersaults, and still the drum is being beaten. And not only the drum being beaten, but all of them are beating in perfect coordination. It's amazing performance. So he did that also, very valuable contribution in reviving Vaishnava culture over there. And his plan was to start a university in the West. Actually, Maharaj was, as you quite told, he was 69 when he left his body. And a few years ago, his health had gone down very much, so his preaching had decreased. But in the last 2-3 years, again, he had started his preaching very vigorously. So Prabhupada had told him to write a scientific commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So he had started that, and he had written on 4 verses, and that was published in the magazine called Savigyanam, which was like the magazine of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, Kolkata. And he has written, in the last few years, he had written several small books, Life, Matter, and What Are They, and like that. Many of you may have seen those books, 7 Nobel laureates on science and spirituality. And his plan was to write 108 books like this, like the 100 Upanishads, so modern day versions, providing philosophical spiritual truths in scientific language. So again, in the last Janmashtami, the celebrations were going on, so at that time some terrorists over there, they threw a bomb in the Manipur temple, and at that time Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj was wounded. So we can see Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj's Krishna consciousness and his fighting spirit by his response. What was his response? He said, we should be grateful to Krishna that the damage is not much. Actually, the terrorists threw two hand grenades, and one was thrown into the pandal, and the other was thrown into the temple hall. And the one in the temple hall just fell in front of the altar. And the pujari saw some stone-like object hard falling into the temple hall. So maybe what has happened? He didn't pay much attention. But by Krishna's mercy, that grenade didn't explode. It didn't blow off. If that had blown off, you can imagine on Janmashtami temple hall if a bomb explodes, how much it will catch you with. So that was his first reference, that Krishna has protected us. And secondly, he said, next year, we will, by Krishna's mercy, have a Janmashtami 3 times bigger than what we have had. So that was his fighting spirit. And then, he himself was wounded by the splinters of that explosion. The another of his godbrother, Bhojadeva Prabhu. You know, he took the brunt of that attack, and most of the bomb hit him. He was seriously wounded, but Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj got some splinters, and he came back and he was admitted in Apollo Hospital in Calcutta. And about 10 days before 2nd October, he was discharged from the hospital. He was just told to take some rest, and he was about to start his preaching again in a vigorous way. So Maharaj's disciples said that in the last 1 week. He was in a very devotional mood. He would be singing bhajans, and he would be hearing bhajans, he was hearing Krishna Katha. And of course, as you know, Maharaj not only had a cultural, he had also a very devotional side. So he was a very sweet singer, and many times in the khyatras, his singing, especially in Manipuri tunes, would attract many, many people. And he was also a poet. And he would write many poems which would inspire introspection and devotion in the hearts of people by his writings. So he was in a very devotional mood, and that day, on the 1st of October, throughout the day he complained of some pain in his left arm, and they didn't give medical attention because the pain, Maharaj didn't complain about it too much. And then that night he was talking about Krishna Katha, and then suddenly he had a very intense pain, and before the doctors could do anything, the pain started around 12 o'clock and 12:10. He left his body. So after that, the body was taken to Manipur, was taken to Taulum. Hundreds and thousands of people came there to offer their tributes to him, and then the body was brought to Vrindavan, and near Radhakund, where the temple was there, where the samadhi was performed. And so now we may get a question that a person who has done so much service for Prabhupada's mission, now how is it that he suddenly leaves his body like this? And he could have done so much more for Prabhupada's mission. And this is a heart attack, something like this. Why does Krishna do this? So then his only Samal Krishna Maharaj left his body. At that time, Jayadrith Maharaj, he gave that offering. At that time he said that. So some devotees are saying that. So some people are saying that Goswami Maharaj passed away in an accident. In Krishna's creation, there are no accidents. So nothing happens by accident. It's all Krishna's plan. And we know from Samal Krishna Maharaj, he had some premonition that he was going to leave his body. So Krishna has a plan. And if you see from a devotional point of view, Calcutta is the birthplace of Srila Prabhupada. So for a disciple to live in the birthplace of the spiritual master, she Gauranga Mahaprabhu took the dust of, what was the place? Kumarahatta, I think. The place of birth of Ishwara Puri, and he carried it everywhere and he would eat that dust. Place of birth of the spiritual master is worshipable. Not only that, Prabhupada said that I would like to leave my body in the battlefield. And the way Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj lived left his body, it was in the BI office, so like his battlefield for him. So it is a glorious departure. It doesn't matter how a devotee lives. What matters is how he has lived. That is what Krishna is going to see ultimately and take him back to Godhead. So as once we should never be disturbed, even if Jayadrith Maharaj says so. It may happen that karmis may die very peacefully and devotees may die violently. But what is important is not how they die, but where they go after that. A karmi may die peacefully and then he may suffer terribly in hell. A devotee may die violently, but he will go back home back to Godhead. So that was like, in one sense, a glorious departure from the birthplace of spiritual master on the battlefield and on a very holy day. So it is a very glorious departure. Now, of course, at one level, it is going to be a great setback for ISKCON and especially for BI, because he was the inspirer and the leader and the pioneer over there. So we are seeing that one by one, every year one leader is leaving this world. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj has asked, now how will Krishna consciousness movement go on if all the leaders are not there? So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj said that actually it is your turn to come forward and be empowered now. And not only that, you see, Prabhupada also said in his last, the last chapter in Lilamrut is the final lesson. But before that, the chapter is, I have done my part. So devotee understand that this is not my mission, it is Krishna's mission, and Krishna will take care of it. And I have to do my part, whatever, as much as I can. But when Krishna has some other plan, he wants to take me back, I will go back. So just a few days ago, I was reading Indradul Maharaj's traveling preacher's diary. So there they had a festival in Poland, and one devotee was telling Maharaj, he was pointing to one very sweet looking girl, small girl, 5-year-old, and he was saying, Maharaj, this is the most amazing child I have ever met. So Maharaj said, why? He said, you know, see, as soon as she came to the festival, the first thing she went did was, she went to the temple and she was praying to the deities for a long time. Then I talked with her mother, and her mother told that my child, since the time she was talking, she has been saying Hare Krishna. I didn't know what Hare Krishna means. Only when after I heard about your festival, I came to know Hare Krishna is prayer from India. But she has always been chanting. And not only that, when she goes to school, and school, when there was a talk about religion, she told the teacher, and yes, all religions are good, but only in India people know who is God. And the other girls have never been to India before this. Not only that, when the teacher, every religion flourishes by miseducating its followers about what the other religions teach. That's why they try to prove the superiority of their own religion. Most religions are like that, now being narrow-minded. So they say that these Indians, you know, they do all sorts of crazy rituals, and then they say, you know, why there is so much malnutrition and hunger and disease in India? Because they don't eat meat. Meat is so essential for nourishment. And then she said that those who eat meat will suffer life after life in hell for their eating meat. And then he said, my 5-year-old daughter, she was talking about reincarnation to her teacher and her students. So reincarnation is unheard of in the Christian religion. And then not only that, when they had gone to the Christian supper, they call it the final supper. They have a ceremony in which they put bread in wine. They dip it in wine and then they offer it to everyone. That is considered to be like a sacred offering coming from Jesus. It's like their version of prasad. So they consider the wine to be like the blood of Jesus and the bread to be like the flesh of Jesus. And then they partake of it. Of course, are you partaking the blood and flesh of your leader? Now their idea is that he sacrificed his life for us, so that's a reminder of that. So she said, this is meat, I will not take it. And she shocked the open assembly, she shocked him. And she preached, she told the Christian father who was offering that last supper, she said, I am a devotee of Krishna, I won't eat meat. So it was so amazing. And then over here also, in the temple also, when she came to the festival, it was as if she already had a relationship with everybody. She was going to the deities and praying. And she went to Jagannath Rath Yatra, and she went to the cows and everything. So then Indra Maharaj said that, he quoted Prabhupada. Prabhupada said that many devotees will be born in different parts of the world to carry on the Krishna consciousness movement. So it is Lord Chaitanya's mission, and Lord Chaitanya will send devotees not just in that one generation, say, he sent Prabhupada, not that only Prabhupada, there are many of Prabhupada's associates who were also Prabhupada's disciples, who were Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates. So of course Prabhupada did not want any of his disciples to be proud that I am an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So once Prabhupada said that those of you who have joined this movement, all of you are the eternal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Once Prabhupada said in the lecture. And then that created a sensation among his disciples.
They were thinking, we take drugs, we have all sorts of...
how can Prabhupada be wrong?
They were thinking very deeply. And finally one of the devotees asked Prabhupada,
is it true that the devotees who joined ISKCON early are eternal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Prabhupada said, yes. And then Hari Prabhu had asked me, he said, that was one moment of ecstatic elation for us. And Prabhupada ended that moment by saying, everyone is.
So everyone is a little bit of a Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Oh, so in the, we are all spirit souls coming from the spiritual world. But up to the point is that there can be very evolved souls who can take birth at a way where they join the Krishna consciousness movement and they can carry on the preaching. And of course, ordinary souls like us, if we also become responsible and we can also be empowered to carry on the preaching. But the Lord will arrange for souls to come in every generation of the Krishna consciousness movement so that it can go on. So, certainly other devotees will be empowered, especially Prabhupada and by Lord Chaitanya to carry on their mission. But of course, that does not minimize the glorious contribution that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did for Prabhupada's mission and for the whole world, in fact. And now, coming to our role, what are we doing as our preaching part. So, the way we are preaching is that we are catering to scientifically minded people. Now all of you, most of you are from engineering backgrounds, some are from medical backgrounds, mostly professional backgrounds. So, Prabhupada, when he went to the West, he said, I have come in here in search of Brahmanas. So, what we are doing is, we are training devotees to become expert spiritual leaders. Spiritual leader means three things. We should be a preacher, we should be a counselor, and we should be a manager. So those of you who are in voices, all of you are getting training in these three things. Everybody who stays in the voice, you become trained as preachers. And then you are also soon given some manager responsibility, some department head, some maybe OC or whatever. So you learn managing. And then all of you may not be officially counselors, but the boys whom you bring to Krishna consciousness, you solve their problems at a small level. That is also like counseling. So these three are the main activities of any spiritual leader. And if you go on, we will get more and more intelligence from Krishna, Dadami Buddhi Yogantam, and we will be able to do it more and more. So in that sense, what we are doing is, we are taking the, practically speaking, the very intelligent youth from all over India, and we are training them to become spiritual leaders for Prabhupada's mission. So, we are not focusing per se on scientific teaching, because not many of us are from that background. We are not either interested in, or we are not being exposed to that level of scientific teaching. So that is not our focus. But we should know that what is happening over here is also Prabhupada's desire, because Prabhupada said we wanted Brahma. And especially if we want to, there is class preaching and there is mass preaching. So what we are doing is also class preaching in one sense. Now we are preaching to very people who would otherwise have become leaders in society also. So at the same time, scientific preaching, it has its its requirements. Now one has to have a very great scientific zeal, and it is often very challenging intellectually. And it's also, science is not just scientific, so there is a lot of politics involved. Samal Krishna Maharaj, towards the end, just when he was completing his PhD, one of his associates, Mukunda Patel, was telling me that he was very fed up with the envy that was there in the academic profession. So, of course, there are other devotees which are doing that, but our focus is mainly on training devotees who are scientifically minded to preach to other scientifically minded people and attract educated people to Krishna consciousness. So, that's why if you see, our preaching will be much faster. Like, if you see the strength of BI, there's just maybe all the BIs combined together have a strength of 40-50 people. That's all. But we have been here for around 8-10 years, and we have all 316 rounders and many boys connected to Krishna consciousness. All the devotees who get training in voices, they get training for say 5 years or 10 years, and they can open centers of Krishna consciousness wherever they go. So I know one devotee was in Pune, now he's in Germany. When he went to Germany, we were concerned whether he would be able to even preach, he would be able to practice Krishna consciousness. But he started preaching over there, and he has made 15 people into 16 rounders over there in Germany. Not only that, he is preaching so powerfully that now the Munich temple, they are asking you come and give programs in our temple so that people will come to the temple also. So devotees who get trained in Pune, they can do wonders for ISKCON worldwide. So of course, we should not compare. What we are doing is very important, and what we are doing in IRAP is also very important. And we understand that that all these are parts of the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And wherever we fit best, we should fit in and do what we can. So one last point and I'll conclude. So we see that His Holiness Jayadvait Maharaj in last year's Vyasaji offering, he writes about how Prabhupada, now he writes, first sentence is, now Prabhupada, we your disciples are on our way out of this world. Some of us have left and others are leaving. And he says, as the devotees are leaving, they are all proving the glory of the movement that you started. Because there are many movements which can write books, there are many movements which can build temples, there are many movements which can have many followers. But bhajan ke liye, sadhan ke liye, marte jaan le hai. At the time of death, that is the real test. So no offense intended to anyone, but if you compare the passing away of Bhakti Kesa Maharaj and the passing away of Pope John Paul II, there's no comparison in the realization. Bhakti Kesa Maharaj, the exalted realization. He wrote a book about the experience of dying, die before you die. And of course, Pope John Paul II's passing away was also dignified, and as per the knowledge that he had, it was glorious. But still, if you compare objectively, the way ISKCON devotees one by one are passing the final exam of death, it's glorious. So, Yashoda Maharaj, who left laughing, he laughed his way to death. Gaurgaon Maharaj, he left in a holy place while deciding their Lord pastimes. Ramakrishna Maharaj, he left at the, although it seemed to be an accident, he left at the same place where Hridas Thakur was performing bhajan in the Brahma Muhurat Towers, in Gaurmandal. And who else? Apart from that, then there was one disciple of Prabhupada, Mula Prakriti Mataji. Now she left with Prabhupada's Vitya close to her heart. She had written a book on our Srila Prabhupada, all the pastimes of Prabhupada before he started his school, before he went abroad. So many disciples. So Bhakti Jayadev Maharaj died that, and we see now Bhakti Sardama Maharaj also right, on a holy day, in a holy place, on the battlefield. So he writes that in a class, when the students pass, the prayer goes not only to the students, but it also goes to the teacher. Because you have all these tuition classes. So unless we have so many students of ours, gave me the merit list. Some of the students passed IITJ like that. So the credit also goes to the students. And your credit to Prabhupada is all the greater. Because you drew your civilization students from the West. A civilization of the uncivilized. A culture that drags people down to a horrible death. If we had not come to Krishna consciousness, we would have all been completely identifying ourselves with our bodies, and we would have suffered terribly and died when we would have. So you have drawn your students from the civilization of the uncivilized, and you have raised them to the level of purity and devotion by which they can go back to God. So here's our suffer phrase. Can you repeat? Adrushya Aspushya Mora
Adrushya Aspushya Mora
Angikara Kaila
Angikara Kaila
Rauhaiti Nikali
Rauhaiti Nikali
Vaikuntha Chadaila
Vaikuntha Chadaila.
So Adrushya Aspushya Mora, so out of his humility he is saying, my dear Lord, I am untouchable and unseeable. But Angikara Kaila, you have accepted me as your servant. Rau Rau Haite Nikali, I was assigned to go to the hell Rau Rau and burn in its fires. But Rau Rau Haite Nikali, Vaikuntha Chadaila, and you have raised me to the platform of Vaikuntha. So how can we Prabhupada writes in that purport, we should always be grateful to Krishna for having saved us from the materialistic life and its hellish destination, which is common to practically all people in Kali Yuga. So he concludes offering to that Prabhupada who converts death into eternal life. Let us offer our repeated obeisances again and again. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj ki
jai.
Nidai Gaur Premanande.
Hari Hari Bol.
Sorry for going over time.